Staff at Deutsche Bank flagged transactions tied to entities controlled by Donald Trump, and his son-in-law Jared Kushner saying they should be reported to a federal watchdog for financial crimes. That's according to a report in the New York Times on Sunday, who cited five current or former employees at the German-based bank. The sources told The Times the bank rejected the advice from their own anti-money laundering specialists, and that those reports were never filed with the government.
Google's parent company, Alphabet, has suspended some business with Huawei, a major blow to the Chinese tech giant that the U.S. government has sought to blacklist around the world. Business requiring the transfer of hardware and software products, except those covered by open source licenses, is suspended, though details of the specific services were still being discussed internally at Google.
After hailing a miracle election win on Saturday, it was perhaps apt that Australia's Prime Minister Scott Morrison started Sunday in church. Voters had answered his prayers the day before, setting his Liberal Party-led Conservative coalition on course for enough seats to form a majority government. That's despite years of unfavourable polls and widely held expectations that the opposition Labour Party would win. Its leader, Bill Shorten, is now stepping down.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's May 20th, 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell as we get going here on another business week, another business day getting underway. Lots going on this morning on the program. It's our CEO spotlight this morning. Billy Deck will be here. He, of course, is the owner of Sunda Restaurants and also an actor and editor as well. And we'll have him in our CEO spotlight. Just a few minutes we'll bring in Billy this morning to talk about the anniversary of Sunda Restaurants and what is happening in his world these days. That'll be a good conversation this morning. And then a little bit later, at about 5:38, the Illinois General Assembly considering a bill that would force Illinois' corporate boards to diversify, to add more women and minorities. And that conversation will come up again at about 5:38 this morning. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk with Dow futures, S&P and NASDAQ futures all in the red this morning by single digits up to 34 points lower on the NASDAQ. NASDAQ futures off nearly a half a percent this morning as we head to the opening bell. The bell will ring this morning after a lower close on the last trading day. Ongoing worries about trade negotiations with China help drive the Dow and S&P down more than a half a percent for last week, while the NASDAQ was a full percentage point lower. At Friday's close, the Dow was 100 points, down 100 points. The NASDAQ lost about 82 points. The S&P sank about 17. As we look around the rest of the world this morning in Asia, markets there are mixed. The Nikkei is going to end the day down about a quarter of a percent. Everything else in the red this morning. And also in Europe, a lot of red on the board as well. The FTSE, the DAX, and the CAC in London, Germany, and France all down by nearly a third to nearly three quarters. And oil is trading in the U.S. at $63.08 a barrel. A couple of stories as we begin this morning. Google is cutting ties with the Chinese telecom giant Huawei. The move comes after the White House declared a national emergency over threats to national security from overseas tech companies, which was widely understood to mean Huawei. Google's decision to stop doing business with the company means Huawei won't be able to make some software changes to its smartphones that use Google's Android operating system. Huawei will still be able to fix bugs using Google's open source code. The company is the third largest smartphone maker in the world. Amnesty International is suing a secretive Israeli firm whose spyware allegedly was used to hack the messaging app WhatsApp. The Rights Human Rights Group said it's a suit that in its suit that they fear they might be under surveillance along with other organizations. Amnesty also is petitioning the Israeli government to revoke the export license of NSO Group, which developed the spyware. WhatsApp said last week the breach of its security might have targeted human rights groups. WhatsApp has 1.5 billion users around the world. The tariffs over with Canada and Mexico, and that's good news for farmers. Canada and Mexico lifted tariffs as they imposed that they had imposed on pork and other food products. those tariffs on steel and aluminum also being lifted by our North American neighbors. The president of the National Pork Producers Council says Mexico's retaliatory tariff has cost U.S. pork producers $1.5 billion. Let's begin this morning with our CEO Spotlight. Billy Deck is here this morning, a two-time Emmy Award-winning entertainment TV personality, a producer, actor, also the man behind Sunda Restaurant in Chicago, now also in Nashville. Billy's here to talk a little about what's happening in his world these days. Also the CEO of the organization Rocket Ranch. This morning, let's welcome in Billy Deck. Billy, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's nice having you in. We want to get an update on all things Billy Deck this morning. So lots to talk about. Congratulations, because this is the anniversary of Sunda.
Yes, it's so interesting. The 10-year anniversary of Sunda in Chicago happened to fall right on the one-year anniversary of Sunda in Nashville. So it's been a wild ride. We finished all our events in Nashville, and now we've finished our events in Chicago.
So talk to us a little bit about both of them. First, I'm interested in Nashville, how that's going.
You know, it's really interesting. I was born and raised here in the city of Chicago, everywhere from Wrigley Field all the way to Hyde Park along the lake. And I just am all things Chicago my entire life. And to be all of a sudden opening in another city is just I can't even describe how crazy of an experience is. Thankfully, we did the right kind of research in advance to make sure that there was all the right things in place. I mean, there is no formula, obviously, for any business, really, but definitely in the restaurant business. But we really went into it looking at Nashville as the top city to expand into for several reasons. Proximity, 55 minutes on a flight. There was a great Chicago-Nashvillian relationship for so many decades. People were coming up here to shop, theater, sightsee, you know, sort of a center point. And then a lot of Chicagoans were going to Nashville. And so there was a lot of wonderful synergies and also a booming economy there. So it was kind of the right time.
And it's also, you've touched on this, but it's kind of the place to have a restaurant these days, isn't it? Just not just any restaurant, but all kinds of restaurants.
Yeah, you know, it sort of was at this interesting intersection of that need and that demand being there. And then now sort of falling into the situation that many big cities have fallen into, where there's a bit of overstock. It's just a little crowded. And so it's had a lot of effects in Nashville that Chicago has seen, where labor gets tough, costs get pretty high, especially with rents. And it was an interesting 2 years. I was there exactly 2 years ago when I found the space that we moved into. And at the time, I got to experience both of those visuals. The demand portion, and then sort of the oversaturation portion.
So, when you transfer an idea from there to here, how has Sunda Nashville? How is it different from Nashville or from Sunda Chicago, or is it at all?
Well, I think with any business that you're trying to replicate, and I can't really speak like I'm some sort of expert because this was the first one that I expanded into another market, another city. You have to do a number of things, and I really tried to hit upon all these points that I found other people doing that were successful in other industries. One being making sure that I had the right network and partnerships. I spent 7 years going down there and really feeling it out and creating a network and community of people that who eventually became partners and investors that were strategic, that had strengths that could help me navigate through really hard times, because that's what you come across when you're an entrepreneur, or just really anyone in life, but an entrepreneur and especially a restaurateur. So that was one of them. The other thing is you have to go in without ego and pare down a lot of things. So we went there with the greatest hits of Sunda Chicago, but we didn't go there with the 10-year, four-panel menu, chest out, broad shoulders, big, huge team. Everyone's really worked out all the kinks and we all understand each other without speaking. We went down there with a third size of the menu. And we also brought five of our top guys who wanted to actually go and expand the brand. So it was our director of ops, our top mixologist, our top head chef partner. Mm-hmm. It was quite the A team going out there to really, roll the dice. And because if that wouldn't have worked, it could be a problem.
So where did the dice end up? Is it too early to tell? Can you give it a report card?
I mean, knock on wood, everything's been really wonderful. We've made a great opening out there. The music industry, especially all the country music stars and the football hockey teams. They all eat there with all the locals. I thought it was going to be a bachelor sort of like mecca, being the new bachelorette capital of the world, beating Vegas and all these other places mm-hmm. around the world. But oddly enough, it is. We hardly ever see bachelorettes there. That's all locals. And in fact, some of the people, like let's say the quarterback of the Tennessee Titans, Marcus Mariota, loved it so much, he asked if we could start cooking his breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We started packing his meals for home and away. Yes. And then he became an investor and became an owner with us. Same thing with actors like Johnny Galecki, David Schwimmer, Chicago guys that wanted to see what we all called a Chicago concept, even though it's Southeast Asian where my mom's from and where I've traveled my whole life. We called it a Chicago concept growing. And growing into Nashville. And they wanted to see that be successful. And they came on as partners and investors as well.
How much time do you spend down there now? And I kind of half expected to hear a Southern accent, a Southern twang this morning.
I do. You know what? I do say y'all a lot, but I kind of said that in Chicago too. It's just a different y'all. It's kind of like a city y'all and then like sort of a country y'all. But I'm there, and I never thought I would ever have this kind of life because I thought it would be extremely hard. And I have to say it's not really that hard, especially with the internet, the way in which you can work on your phones, Uber, and just sort of the way in which you can work from or off-premise. I actually work half the week in Nashville and then fly here on Thursday mornings and do all my meetings Thursday, Friday, and I'm here through Saturday. So I do half the week there and half the week here, and it's a 55-minute flight. And that is totally not a true statement. When it's 20 below here, I will do more. I will do more days.
We won't blame you for that
over there. And then when it's 100 degrees there, and it's you have your Chicago summer months, and it's 75 and sunny and beautiful. Last summer, I had to probably have flipped it, and I was here most of the time.
We talk about a lot of restaurants on this program and the restaurant business. To have a restaurant that's successful after 10 years, that's a rarity. What are the pieces of the recipe for that's made it so successful?
I don't know. I want to know. No, we actually are doing quite a bit. I have someone that I met was the chief operating officer of the National Restaurant Association 8 years ago. And I met him when I was doing this keynote speech. And I was really nervous, I remember. And the mayor came out and we were doing the ribbon cutting. And he just made me feel really comfortable. And he knew so much. I didn't understand the depth of his background. But his name is David Gilbert. And he became one of the guys who invited me out to Nashville first 7 years ago. And he really has a huge background in probably opened 500 restaurants over his time for big chains and stuff. And one of the things that he is really not only he helping me to do as a partner, he came on as a partner to help open Sunday Nashville. He's been helping me as a mentor to really start documenting everything, making everything systematic, making sure that the checks and balances and all the procedural do's and don'ts are all in place and just sort of memorialized in some way. And I find myself trying to figure out how to answer that question. How do you document, memorialize the things that worked and the things that didn't so that you can actually answer a question like that. I will say, yes, it's so crazy looking back at it. What is that number, I wonder, of people, especially in full service, higher level restaurants, that actually make it to their 10th year and thriving? It's really brought a lot of like happiness to all of us because that number has to be 0.01 mm-hmm. something. Yeah. I don't know. It's really tough. And by the way, I know that partially because I've had places that failed too. Like I know how hard it is. I know what it's like to just completely fail. And I would also say that a lot of those failures helped contribute to the successes and a lot of the decisions that are being made. But I would say for sure, couple things. Having been the person that has left certain concepts over time, one was really picking one that was organically part of my DNA, part of my culture, part of my background. So it almost didn't feel like work. It was invigorating to talk about the things that I really wanted to share from a person who grew up in an Asian American family, both here and throughout Southeast Asia every year since we were a baby. And just going back and forth and to the point where I actually filmed a documentary this January, where I went back to go try to find my elders, find my relatives that I haven't seen since I was 3 in some parts of the Philippines, because it's 7,460 islands or something like that. And I went and I found them to find the recipes of our ancestors, to try to go back in time to really connect with everything in that way, because that's what's been so inspiring. So I think that's one of them. The other one is just surrounding yourself with the best people that are way better than you, because I'm only good at like one or two things, and then I suck at a lot.
Yeah. Like I want to talk about the documentary, but I want to ask one more thing about how you've gotten to this point. Over the last couple of years, there's been some big changes. The partnership at Rocket Ranch sort of ended. All of those things. You opened this new restaurant. Talk to us a little bit about that process and how that impacts on your daily life.
Yeah. So I had is so past tense when I really feel like I still have them in my life. But I've had some of the most amazing partners over time. And I actually started Rocket Ranch in 2002. I had some really wonderful partners that I kind of came up with. But we really started to go in different directions. And for me, looking at eight different concepts, probably like 3 years ago, and realizing that I wasn't feeling like I was doing a good job. I really wasn't giving enough to any one thing, kind of. I was too spread thin. I wasn't as passionate as others were, tremendously passionate about. And so what strategically made sense, this goes back to like things you may have read about or things that you've done that I heard too, where they say, you know, write down what you really want to do. Like, where do you want to be? Mm-hmm. Like, what would be great for you? And then, you know, and then put down where you are now. Just put everything down on that piece of paper. And it looked like a tornado of crazy, like all over this sheet. And then the other sheet had like two or three things. And I was like, how do I get there? And it's you begin to figure out how to get there, but then will you do it? Because you will take a beating like you've never seen. It's going to be financially painful. It's going to be psychologically, emotionally painful, all sorts of things, because people are going to look at you like you're crazy. People are going to think you're hurting. People are going to think you're an idiot. And they did. And you have to kind of go through that turmoil, because change hurts. But you know what hurts probably even more is the type of change that happens when you don't have anything to do with it.
Yeah.
And what I was trying to do was beginning to mold what my situation would be in the future, because I was not good in the position I was. I wasn't a great entrepreneur. I wasn't a great leader. I wasn't a great partner. I wasn't a great anything. I was just, it was too much. We were flailing around in a tornado trying to grab things and make things happen. Or at least I was. I don't want to make this about anyone else but me. Like, I totally was not good in that situation. But I saw where things could be really great. And life is short. You know, you see people drop around you and it's just like, all right, well, what am I waiting for? And, you know, I saw Sunda was a bright shining star for me. I saw all the TV work that I really love to do, just hosting and acting and any sort of storytelling on different mediums, whether it's radio like this, my podcast or TV or movies. And I couldn't do it all. I was really not good at it all. So I had to start really focusing. And that was the biggest change in my life. Ever.
Back to the documentary. I think a lot of people are excited to know more about what you found. Where will we be able to see this? What have you learned? Are you incorporating some of this stuff now into Sunda here and there?
Totally. It was probably one of the most life-changing experiences of my entire life. So proud of it. Can't wait for everyone to see it. I actually put it on my website, billydeck.com. You'll see right away it says documentary. If you hit it, there is a teaser of a lot of the scenes all mixed into one, where you're seeing everything from obviously like quintessential Filipino family pig roast, but other really obscure dishes that weren't really hard to make that had tremendous story importance and a through line throughout the whole thing that told me about my particular culture and my family, which eventually told me about a lot of things that never made sense to me growing up here in America, so far away, half Filipino, half Eastern European, and really only getting certain bits to transfer into my sort of head and heart. And growing up with that was what it was. A lot of kids made fun of the food that we had and growing up, or, you know, I mentioned they make fun of us at our house and say what stinks and this, that, and the other. And those are hard things to grow up with as a little kid. And here we are at a time where all these TV shows, hosts, food magazines are calling Filipino food the genre of the year to explore. And I've only had sort of the regurgitated top line hits handed down to us over all that space. And I wanted to cut the space, go back in time, and really figure out what my ancestors were eating and why, to kind of learn more about me personally and our family personally, and then to pass it down for future generations. Because the scary part is it's not about me totally. It's about watching what is being projected nationally at this time, not to make it too political, but it is, I'm comfortable enough saying, very strong media and political communication that could make people of different cultures feel incredibly embarrassed and alienated. And there should be an embracing of all backgrounds, and sometimes doing it through food is a really easy way to do that. And it's what makes up, you know, the country's beauty, in my opinion, that diversity. And I just want younger kids to be like, that's cool, I want to do that too, and get to know it and celebrate it.
It's interesting you bring that up. I think the late Anthony Bourdain did that pretty well. Yeah. And there's sort of a, now that he's gone, we miss some of that. Those of us who like to watch that sort of thing, is this something that you might want to explore more, and or we might maybe see a Billy Deck series about this?
Well, I could never be, I don't ever think I would ever be on that level, but I do know that I've created space for passion more, and passion meaning work-related product that I'm really excited about to put more and more into. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, if you look at this documentary, and PBS has sort of put out a fundraising page for it, and it's, you know, really, it has a lot of those. In fact, I've hosted a lot of TV shows before where I'm talking to camera and I'm talking kind of quick and I'm just kind of like trying to tell stories very quickly. Or I've done live TV shoots, like I'm doing the Today Show and all these other things for a bunch of years where it's like so four camera fast, crazy, and I was like really amped up. But when I got out there, I realized I had no support. I was really just going with renegade style with no budget, running around in a van and boats and you name the type of transportation, motorcycles. We were just trying to find family in different islands and mountains and whatever. So I really didn't get time to talk to the camera. And so what I noticed was I was going to just tell the story over it in time so that I could really focus on the experience and you could see it in my eyes and I could take it all in and not make it showy. And then what happened was I said, oh, that's what Bourdain was doing. Like I was like, wow, that. And then I rewatched his stuff, having had those, that visual, and I'm saying that experience, and going, oh, that's why he was just chilling, good, mm-hmm. just taking it in, not worrying about the TV portion. He was just experiencing the culture and the dynamics of people and food and difference and diversity and the way in which that intersection kind of comes together over food. And I felt it, and I was like, "This really works. This is magic." And I think everyone will love it. And we got offers to put it on different platforms, but we went with PBS because I wanted to keep it in its natural form, tell a real story, and make it accessible for everybody.
Let's talk a little bit about how you find the next cool thing, or how you keep something going. You've had the real knack over your career of being able to have your finger sort of on the pulse, looking in at you doing that. You're very successful at it. Things have changed a lot. People don't go out anymore sometimes. They're eating at home. They're Ubering. They're Grubhubbing. How do you run a successful food business, entertainment business, when people are doing that?
So you're bringing up like something that is a phenomenon, and it's very scary. It's super scary, and I'm not the guy. I never watched the shows where people are like scaring you out of your mind to think mm-hmm. certain things. But just to give a couple thoughts. I was in New York like 4 years ago, which seems like a lifetime ago, and I saw one of the most iconic nightclub owners of all time. And he had shut down his nightclub that had no business being shut down. And we were like, why would you shut that down? Why are you out of nightclubs? And what's the thing where you swipe right or whatever with the dating?
Tinder.
Yeah, yeah. I looked at my assistant. Like, sorry about that. So he said the one thing I would never expect ever. He looked at me and said Tinder, and I was like, don't understand what you mean. And here we are 4 years later. And so what's really happening is you can get any sort of entertainment experience you want and I mean anytime, even any kind, dating, on TV. You can get a mixology kit. You can get a chef prepared meal. You can get anything you want, whenever you want it, wherever you want it, however you want it. And that is taking a huge chunk out of the restaurant business, one at which is becoming incredibly difficult for restaurant operators to own these brick and mortar places because costs are going up like crazy. And I don't just mean rental costs, but insurance, definitely HR costs have just gone through the roof from what we've experienced over the course of just the last 10 years. But there are, you know, food costs, all energy costs, everything's gone up. And so that combined with the one thing that scares me the most is these delivery services take like 30%, 20%, 30%. Restaurant owners don't make 20%, 30% on their food. So this has become a huge – my friends in New York are in other places that have gone to a higher minimum wage scenario, and I'm all for – one side of me is all for it. I'm all for higher minimum wage in one voice. The other one is like, uh-oh, the economics no longer work because – and they've gotten out of the restaurant business. They basically said, I'm ending my career because proactively we have looked at the numbers. It doesn't make sense. And we have to actually re-engineer our entire lives to find some other kind of work because this we're going to enjoy some part of the restaurant business. And so what I did is for Sunda was we began to really focus on elevating the experiential in four walls version of what a Sunda experience is. And that's why for the 10-year anniversary, you'll see like Sunda, you know, sushi rolling classes we did or a pig roast or a vegan feast. And in this particular case, we gave all the proceeds to Camp One Step, which is a camp for kids with cancer that I've been supporting for years. But these are things that we do in general, weekly, monthly, because we want to bring people out so that they can't have these at home. They really understand, and that's why the documentary is there, and that's why we tell a lot of story about food, because you can't get that experience of hearing and feeling the story amongst people. Like this one meal is kamayan. It's a 30-foot table of tons of Filipino food that people have probably not tried before on banana leaves that you eat with your hands with a bunch of strangers. You can't actually get the magic that occurs after that at home on your couch. Trust me, I love food on my couch. I get it all the time. But you sort of, as a business owner, have to begin to create experiences that people can't get. And, you know, the documentary is not just me running off to do some crazy project. It really does align with the Sunda story. Mm-hmm. So you begin to tell the Sunda story or any business. This is applicable to any business. You tell your brand story in many different fashions, in many different ways, different levels, so that people can begin to piece together and realize that they can't absorb that digitally necessarily. They have to come to the four walls. But the costs are really damaging. I think it's going to change the world, sadly, in a pretty important way.
Right.
Support your restaurants and support any brick and mortar, because I know how easy it is to order in, but and order retail. You just apply it to anything. Plants, I don't care what it is, but it's really hard for the shop owner to survive.
Pull out your crystal ball, if you will. What's the next 10 years, do you think, going to hold for you?
Oh, man. I think there's been already a showing of quick service, fast casual explosions because people are not only demanding it now, but they're feeling the reworked, the re-engineered labor model that's in those where it just takes less to do. I think everything's going to continue. I think the 20-30% that delivery services are hitting restaurant owners with is going to get really, really bad, and then hopefully that will level out. Someone will fix that situation because it can't sustain itself. It just won't work. I get really nervous because, like, for Chicago, there's so much ridiculous talent. Okay, like in the kitchen, yes. Behind the bars, yes, but just really everywhere throughout the venue. It takes all 100% of every employee to make the orchestration of all those inputs to come out to an elevated entertainment experience that people will actually remember and value. It takes everyone. And I worry that that surviving in those atmospheres and those like habitats, the restaurant, is becoming very, very, very hard. So I actually don't even like to think about it, what that could look like in 10 years. I think people are going to pop up in a lot of different cities, kind of like Nashville was 8 years ago. About 4 years ago, they're going to pop up in these. That's why you see these people going to all these places throughout the South. There's some, very affordable communities, both from a living perspective and definitely from a working perspective, an investment perspective. I think that's happening. I'm not promoting that. I'm just saying that it's happening now. And if you ask me what's going to happen in 10 years, if people can't survive in these environments, they're going to go to places where they're applauded. By the way, applauded in Nashville for being there. It wasn't my usual opening experience, mm-hmm. where I was working really hard, overpaying for legal, overpaying for HR, overpaying for construction, overpaying for all these people just to have a shot at the thing that is the worst odds ever. In Nashville, it was all of them coming out to cheer you on, mm. to support you, to just thank you over and over again. We still say thank you a lot, but I've never had more people thank us before, during, and after than in an up and coming city that just wants to have more people invest in it. Or live in it. So I think there's a lot of those cities popping up around the country.
Well, again, congratulations on 10 years of Sunda, and best of luck in Nashville as well. And thank you for coming in this morning.
Thank you so much.
Billy Deck is the CEO and founder of Rocket Ranch Productions. And you can listen to more of our conversation after the bell this morning. We will continue talking with Billy Deck and post that in the podcast of the opening bell a little bit later this morning at WGNradio.com. And make sure you head over to RocketRanch.com for more news on Rocket Ranch Productions and Billy Deck.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of the opening bell. A couple of other business stories we're watching this morning. A business group says the number of foreign companies in China that feel compelled to hand over technology in exchange for market access has doubled since 2 years ago. The issue is one of the complaints behind the president's tariff fight with Beijing. The European Union Chamber of Commerce in China's report today highlighted enduring complaints about forced technology transfer despite official denials and promises of change. The chamber said one in five companies that responded to a survey said that they feel compelled to hand over technology. The number was higher in some industries, 30% in petroleum and chemicals, 28% in medical devices. Another new survey shows that public transportation agencies are using drones in nearly every state. The report obtained by the Associated Press shows a sharp increase in their use over the last few years, reflecting the rapid adoption of the technology by governments. In Utah, drones are hovering near avalanches to watch soaring snow. In North Carolina, they're searching for the nests of endangered birds. In Kansas, they could soon be identifying sick cows through heat signatures. The report from the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials shows a sharp increase in their use over the last few years, reflecting the rapid adoption in technology by governments as well as by hobbyists. In 2016, the nonprofit group found no state transportation agency was using drones on a daily basis. Now 36 states have certified drone pilots on staff. When the survey was done this month, all but one state was using drones in some way or another. Since then, the lone holdout, Rhode Island, has bought a drone, and that's according to a spokesperson for the group. The small unmanned aircraft are often used for small tasks like inspecting bridges and roads. With sophisticated cameras and thermal technology, they can detect tiny cracks and identify potential potholes before they become visible to the human eye. We all know that recycling is a big issue for the country, and investment in recycling is also a big deal. China's decision to restrict scrap imports created big challenges for U.S. recycling programs last year, but also has spurred investment in plants that process recyclables no longer being shipped overseas. The investors include Chinese companies that still need access to waste paper or flattened bottles as raw material for manufacturing. The nonprofit group Recycling Partnerships has about $1 billion in investment in U.S. paper processing plants has been announced in the past 6 months. The Northeast Recycling Council said last fall that 17 North American paper mills had announced increased capacity to handle recycling paper since the Chinese cutoff in January of 28. Companies are also investing in plastic and scrap metal plants in Georgia, Indiana, and in North Carolina. The United Arab Emirates energy minister says he doesn't think relaxing oil production cuts in place is the right measure right now. He spoke to reporters yesterday on the sidelines of the meetings of the world's major oil producers. His comments suggest that there is support within OPEC to extend the 1.2 million barrels a day to cut a cut in place that has been in place since January. As part of the six-month deal reached, OPEC countries, including Saudi Arabia and UAE, were expected to cut production by 800,000 barrels a day, while non-OPEC countries, including Russia, trim 400,000. Also, as we watch oil prices over the last few days, cuts aimed at propping up those oil prices after a sharp drop last year, oil now trading above $70 a barrel and closer to what's needed to balance state budgets among Persian Gulf producers. Speaking of oil and eventually gas, the average U.S. price of regular gasoline fell 3 cents a gallon over the past 2 weeks to $2.93. That's according to industry analyst Trilby Lundberg of the Lundberg Survey. Says that this is the first drop at the pump in 4 months. She says the price is 6 cents lower than it was a year ago. The highest average price in the nation is $4.08 a gallon. That's in the San Francisco Bay Area. The lowest average is $2.35 in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. The average price of diesel fell a penny over the last 2 weeks to $3.16. The Japanese government says the economy grew there at an annual pace of 2.1% in the first quarter, marking the second straight quarter of expansion. The cabinet office says seasonally adjusted real gross domestic product, the total of value of the nation's goods and services, grew 0.5% in January through March. The annual pace shows how much GDP would have grown if that had continued on for a year. Healthy public investment, private residential investment helped boost growth during the quarter, according to the data. The data helping fuel Japan's positive end to the day of trading, the Nikkei ending positive, the only one of the Asian markets to do that in trading today.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, we're seeing futures fall even further this morning as we head to the opening bell. Dow futures now down 91 points, off nearly a third. S&P futures off nearly 0.5%. NASDAQ futures are down 75 points, down a full percent, heading to the opening bell. Now agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, an interesting trip over the weekend that I want to talk about this morning. We drove on I-90 from Huntley, Illinois, up to Sparta, Wisconsin, and ended up at Westby. That's the Norwegian community that celebrated Norwegian Independence Day over the weekend, 7 de Mai. But I was more interested in the weather. Drove in rain nearly all the way going up. And yesterday, drove in rain nearly all the way until we crossed the Wisconsin state line into Illinois. And some of the rainfall was the heaviest I have ever seen, causing vehicles to slow down and some to come to a stop because visibility had dropped as the rain continued to fall. And as I looked at the fields between northern Illinois and La Crosse, Wisconsin, ponds and standing water all over the place. Talking to farmers at the event in Westby, they said, "We haven't been in the field and we don't know when we'll get into the field." And yesterday it was, of course, an additional rainfall that made the ponds even deeper and even wider. Probably a lot of prevent planting coming up this crop season if we don't get planting weather very soon. Market-wise, the cattle industry may show a little strength today after the Japan-U.S. trade talks were announced that made it possible for probably another $200 million worth of U.S. beef to be sold to Japan annually. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a good day as well. Let's do a couple more stories here as we end up the program this morning. Pay It Forward is sort of the inspirational message that billionaire Robert F. Smith, pledged to pay the Morehouse College class of 2019's student loan debt during his commencement address at the University in Atlanta over the weekend. Morehouse President David Thomas says that means graduates have even greater potential with this huge burden removed.
396 individuals will have their debt wiped out thanks to Robert F. Smith.
And billionaire Robert F. Smith paying the entire college class of 2019 at Morehouse College, paying off all of their student loan debt. Britain's lame duck prime minister promises a bold offer as she tries yet again to push her Brexit deal through Parliament. ABC's Tom Rivers is at the foreign desk this morning.
While few have liked her previous three plans, few as well will back a European exit without some kind of an acceptable deal. Opposition Labour Party politician Jack Dromey.
What we cannot allow is for Parliament to fail to live up to its responsibilities to the British people. So we believe there's a firm majority in the House against a no-deal Brexit.
This will be Theresa May's last roll of the dice, as she may only have a few more weeks in office before being forced out by members of her own Conservative Party. Tom Rivers, ABC News, London.
Plant-based burger maker Impossible Foods is debuting meatless sausage crumbles on Little Caesars Pizza. The pizza chain will start testing the Impossible Supreme Pizza today at 58 restaurants, mainly in Washington, New Mexico, and in Florida. The $12 pizza also comes with mushrooms, caramelized onions, and green peppers. If the test goes well, Detroit-based Little Caesars could expand it nationwide. The debut comes amid a growing consumer interest in plant-based meat substitutes. Burger King already testing its Impossible Whopper. A California-based Impossible Foods developed a sausage with sweet Italian seasoning after Little Caesars approached it earlier this year. Impossible Foods says it has not yet announced plans to sell the sausage anywhere else. Like Impossible Burgers, the plant-based sausage is derived from soy plants. Well, we want to let you know that our conversation about forcing Illinois corporate boards to diversify, we'll have to wait for another day. We'll try to find our guest and reschedule that conversation, but we apologize for not being able to bring that to you today. Let's check on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook now for this Monday, May the 20th. On the calendar today, we'll get a report on Chicago Fed national activity. A number of Fed speakers out talking about monetary policy as well. Rafael Bostic, Patrick Harker, also John Williams is speaking today. As we look ahead to the week, it's full of all kinds of economic data, existing home sales tomorrow. We'll get mortgage applications on Wednesday, also the FOMC minutes on Wednesday. On Thursday, new home sales. And then on Friday, durable goods orders. So lots of things that could move the markets this week.